Run on,
from the world famous rock studios in Los Angeles, it's Reign of Troy Radio, a USC football podcast.
Hola, personas, al Rock on Down, la podcastita de Reign of Troy.
You laugh once at his Mexican accent, and he's going to keep doing it.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rot on Got, episode 9, talking about Game of Thrones, season 6, episode 9, the big old episode 9, Battle of the Bastards. If you're looking for USC football, hey, we recorded a USC football podcast on Sunday. It was up Monday morning, so go look for that over on reignoftroy.com or wherever you found this podcast. It's probably there, too. So, as always, follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. We're also on Google Play, TuneIn, Overcast, and SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Reign of Troy Radio. Phone number is 213-373-1872. And our email address is reignoftroy@fansided.com. I'm your host, Michael Castillo.
You're being a dick.
You heard him. You're being a dick.
Yeah. Whatever, Joe.
You are, dude. Stop being a dick.
All right. And joining us is my co-host and the editor of Reign of Troy, Alicia D'Aratola.
Hey, hello, everybody.
And the straw that stirs the drink, our good buddy, Jake Merrifield from the Witch Bruins Show.
Yes, hello. Two drinks in already, so hey, let's enjoy.
There you go. What are you drinking?
It was some Knob Creek, I think. A couple whiskeys. All right. Happy Father's Day to me.
Yeah, happy Father's Day, Jake. The father on the show.
That's right. And I had a lovely Father's Day. Thank you very much.
By the way, was it lost on anybody? Because it definitely wasn't lost on me that Battle of the Bastards happened on Father's Day. It just seemed like a fitting way to honor fathers everywhere was to honor these, you know, illegitimate children fighting each other.
I don't know how
Ramsey certainly did throw the bastard out quite a bit. He liked saying that.
Oh, yeah. He was all over the world.
You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of White Sox fans in 2005 winning the World Series and then looking at the Cubs and saying, "You have such a long drought. Oh, you realize you took 88 years to win a World Series. You were just there too, buddy. Like, Ramsey, you were a bastard like 3 minutes ago. Calm down."
The White Sox metaphor did not occur to me, but now that you say it, I think that is spot on.
See, what I don't understand is that how was the first time that I heard reference to Battle of the Bastards and Father's Day your tweet, Michael, like today? Like, there's been a week for somebody, anybody, on Twitter, in my life, for anyone
Someone else did. I'm sure someone else
No,
did.
But like, how did it not make its way in front of my like computer screen or on my phone or whatever? Like, how is afternoon I see your tweet and go like, oh my God, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that Game of Thrones does this on purpose because John was resurrected on Greek Easter. On Mother's Day, that's when the High Sparrow had his big conversation. I want to say it was with Cersei when he was talking about the joys of being a mother or whatever. And then this was pointed out to us on one of our listener friends, Soren Westwood, was like, "Well, didn't Yara make out with those girls in the brothel on Pride Day? I don't know, maybe."
That's awesome.
The planning that's going on with the show then is pretty impressive.
Yeah, the bastard thing occurred to me that, you know, being kind of ironic on Father's Day. But I was actually thinking if there was going to be an actual like Father's Day sort of moment in this show. And that, you know, I think
there was.
The title,
there was. When Daenerys said, "Look at our fathers, and our fathers, you know, made the world an awful place compared to the one that found it." Remember that?
I stand corrected. Yeah, absolutely. There you go.
Which is totally true, because Balon Greyjoy was a dick. Tywin, I love Tywin to death, but he was a dick. And everyone knows the Mad King was just a little bit off his rocker.
Just a little bit. No, very true.
Well, let's get this podcast going. This is the first time we're going off script. We don't have a rundown because, quite frankly, we don't need a rundown. This episode was pretty memorable. I don't think we need a rundown. There were only two locations in it, Marine and Winterfell. So let's start at the first one.
Marine. Tyrion Lannister.
Daenerys Stormborn.
And company.
Yes, and Drogon. And the other two, which I don't know their names. But the other two dragons and everybody else.
Confirmation, by the way, that they were still under the pyramid this whole time.
Yeah, I was totally wrong about that. Good job, guys. I wanted to bring that up, yeah.
By the way, how did they just know at the right time when to break through that wall?
Like, okay,
dragons talk, dude.
Can we get into this discussion like right now though? Because I had that exact question when it was happening. Have we had an explanation of how she controls them? Because she's used verbal commands in the past, but like, okay, so I don't know if anyone has read the book, the Aragorn, or any of those fantasy series, but it's all about dragons and like dragon riders and stuff.
I read the Dragon Riders of Pern when I was a kid. Those are very good.
So in that one, like, do they use, is there like a mental connection that they use? Because I'm thinking like the only way that this works is if I believe that Dany has, if not a, you know, straight off like actual conversation, mental connection, then she can use her like thoughts to like, you know, do the whole like, I would like you to break out of your prison thing underneath the pyramid and let's all fly together to this one ship and attack this one ship, like coordinated, right? It has to be some sort of mental like wavelength thing, right? I might be overthinking it.
Maybe a little bit, but I think that there's definitely some sort of bond that obviously that Dany has with the dragons. I mean, the dragons think that, you know, she's their mommy, number one. And then, you know, certainly the dragons know how to talk to each other. And there's certainly some sort of bond that they have that they manage to get stuff done with. Now, I don't know whether that's Dany talking to Drogon and Drogon talking to the other two or what that is. But yeah, there's certainly a bond.
Yeah, there's definitely something there. And, you know, I like the way we're just, you know, talking about dragons here. But when Daenerys is riding Drogon, and I'm like, how is she going to, like, get how is she going to get Drogon to just burn up that ship? And then that's when she's like, calls out the commands. And by the way, how uncomfortable is it to ride a dragon? Like, doesn't it look incredibly uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Like, she's, like, holding by those two spine scale things.
You think maybe at some point she might get a saddle or something?
Yeah, you would think. Who knows? You would think.
Who knows? In Dragon Riders of Pern, they had saddles, I believe.
Yeah, in Aragorn, they had saddles.
She's just getting used to this, so maybe by next season she'll be rolling around on a saddle.
All right. Maybe that'll be the throne she rides, the dragon throne.
What'd you guys think of that? I really thought it was cool, the very first opening shot of this, which I know, Michael, you're very impressed with the cinematography of this episode, but I really like the cool cannonballs that the slavers were launching at.
It looked very World War II to me. Like, to me, it looked like a scene out of Pearl Harbor.
Something like that, for sure, yeah. A lot of like, D-Day stuff or something like that, yeah. The sieges and things like that. It was pretty darn cool.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. So let's talk about the scene. The slave masters come in with their ships, which we saw at the end of the last episode. And interesting little scene, Daenerys and Tyrion talking about what to do. And Daenerys is like very on her high horse of, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. You know, we're going to burn the cities down. And Tyrion's trying to slow her down. And like, no, burning cities down doesn't accomplish anything. Like, look at your dad. And your dad has these pockets of wildfire underneath King's Landing. Spoiler alert, that's what Cersei's going to try to do.
Yeah, I know you're Mr. Theory guy, so do you think that's exactly why they introduced that concept there?
If not, it's setting up for a trick or setting up for she's going to try to do that and not do it. But what it was, though, was total confirmation of what had been hinted without words. And it was basically, it was Tyrion flat out saying it for show watchers, which is, you know, good to see. But at that moment, did you actually think that Tyrion was going to be able to talk Daenerys down the ledge and try to be diplomatic about these things, Jake?
I thought that she would be reasonable, right? I mean, she just came back. She's under siege and all that stuff. And, you know, it's kind of got her blood up and she's ready to go kick some more ass after she's already kicked these people's ass before. Now she's much more confident. But I still think that she is reasonable and she agreed to take on Tyrion Targaryen for a reason, and part of that was him advising her. And I think that his alternate, quite a good plan, right? Because she still got to go kick some major ass, but she did so utilizing a little bit of, I guess it's diplomacy, to accomplish it, even though the diplomacy ended up being, we're going to kill you all, let all your warriors, give them the choice to run away, and then we're going to send one guy back to send the message.
Well, and we had talked last week about the possibility of the slavers' ships being sort of taken over and used as part of Dany's plan to get to Westeros. So the thing that Dany has that maybe her father didn't is either a willingness or just the presence of advisors who know what they're talking about. And Tyrion knows what he's talking about. And Tyrion is able, like you said, Jake, like Dany is a reasonable enough person. Like she is ruthless when she needs to be. But if someone offers her a solution to a problem, she generally is willing to listen and is looking to be advised. It's why she's kept the people around her that she has. So it made perfect sense that he would even think to go about things that way. And it's good for her to, you know, somebody with unlimited power, kind of like she has, needs to have people in their ear reminding them that there are other ways to do things rather than just, you know, all the fire.
No, for sure.
Hey, the fire doesn't hurt, though. Fire doesn't hurt for her, at least, like to use it.
Yeah, but the point is that like Tyrion can see that a show of strength is perhaps all that's necessary. You know, she just needs to. I mean, she figured that out with the Dothraki leader guys, that like a show of strength will bring others to her. So, you know, the idea that all you need to do is destroy one ship with those dragons and no one's going to try and mess with you. It's, you know, it's smart planning, and it's the kind of thing that she can use to her advantage because she has the damn dragons.
Yeah, I was wondering how those dragons would stand up if one of those giant cannonballs came flying at them, but they never really tried that. So I guess the surprise advantage really helped them out.
Okay, so we have, I'm sorry to bring this up, Jake, but when we get to Winterfell, we have, again, Shaggy Dog's head because they just have to keep slapping us in the face with that. The direwolves are all being killed off. The dragons, over under one of the dragons dies before the end of the series. Are we going one dragon, two dragon, all the dragons?
It's at least one. At least one has, right, to die. You would think. Then again, spoiler alert, I thought at least somebody of Jon's crew was going to die other than 1-1, and no one did.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I could see them still, they have still that prophecy thing to deal with, and the whole three-headed, she's supposed to have her and two other people join her at some point. I think, Elisa, if you say one, I think that's a push. I think probably one. But I totally could see them all surviving as well. Sorry to not really commit to an answer.
No, but I agree with you because I think if George R. R. Martin was in control, I would definitely bet at least, if not more than one. The way that, and maybe I'm just setting myself up for some bad juju in the season finale, but the way that the showrunners have handled things now that they have control of things is generally a little bit more forgiving, and they seem a little less willing to like get rid of others, if that makes sense. I don't know.
No, it does. And certainly, yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, it just seems like whatever these guys are doing, it's to push the story forward at an incredible pace. And I think what we can take away from these Marine scenes in this episode are, at the end of the day, what the result was is that it clears the way completely for her to come back to Westeros. The Slaver's Bay, I think we talked about this last week. Slaver's Bay is
it all
completely
had to be wrapped
sewn
up.
Completely sewn up. So now all she needs to do is find enough ships to get moving on. And, you know, she found Yara and Theon, and she captured some of her own ships, and we'll see what happens next, but she's ready to roll.
Let's talk about Yara and Theon. So they just show up. I'm kind of disappointed we haven't seen the ships. Like,
House Greyjoy.
Yeah, there you go. And the only time I just talked right over that. The only time we've seen the ships is when they left from the King's Moat. That's it. Like, I want to see them on their ships. I want to see their ships in all their glory. Like, why didn't we get to see them sail into Slaver's Bay, into Marine? Like, that's what I really wanted to see.
I'm going to defend the way they did it because I thought it was a great reveal. because you have Theon talking to somebody and you don't know who it is. And then it's a cut straight to Theon's face. And it's just like a click, like Theon's there. Oh, yes. Like it was just I liked the way it worked. Like I liked that it wasn't like a strong long lead in. I think they had a lot to do in this episode, so I don't think they wanted to spend time on a long lead in. And I think the way that they did it is probably the best way to do a very quick, like, bam. Oh, hey, look, they're there. I don't know that I need to see their ships. I think seeing his face pop up like that was a satisfying way to bring them back into the or basically bring them into like the main storyline.
All right. I wanted the whole thing. I wanted that awkward moment of they come in and like, wait, who are you? Who are you? The who? And we didn't really get to see that. Like we got to see Daenerys being skeptical of them, but it wasn't like a who the hell are you? I wanted a who the hell are you moment.
See, all I care about is that we got and I had never really put this together until this scene. We got Daenerys and Yara like being badasses in the same room together, like
and Yara making a pass.
Well, but they were both like quipping at each other, like back and forth, and like so there was this crosstalk between Theon and Tyrion, which I hadn't thought about, but is the callback to the first season, and then there's the crosstalk, just the way that they had them standing in that room even was interesting. The crosstalk between Yara and Dany, and then like the parallels between Yara and Dany as these revolutionary female wannabe rulers. I don't, maybe wannabe is not the right word because that implies that they don't deserve it. But just there was a touch of like girl power in it, and the smirking that was going on between them. Just I enjoyed it way too much. It just like made me happy.
It was definitely there, yeah. And kind of what, yeah, I've already mentioned it before. You know, I just mentioned a minute ago the whole idea that Dany would have two people riding these dragons with her. And I always assumed it would be two men, but with her and Yara making googly eyes at each other, and with how Sansa's storyline is kind of coming together, to me, that's certainly a very plausible theory, is that it ends up being three girls riding these dragons, tearing up the city and taking on the White Walkers.
And I'll throw in, I love that theory. I'll throw in an alternative, maybe a certain Arya Stark who would totally be down to ride a dragon.
Sure. Perhaps. For sure.
No, it's going to be Jon and it's going to be Tyrion because they're the two Targaryens that are not named Dany that's still alive. Or Varys. Varys could be a Targaryen. That's why he's shaving his head, because he's hiding his Targaryen mane.
Okay, your theory making is going way too far now.
I'm just saying. But anyway,
sounds rumpy, pumpy.
I love it when you use that. I really do. But
that's one of my favorites.
We see Meereen all buttoned up, nice and tidy. Even though in the next episode, the teaser for the next episode looks like they're going right back there. So that's going to be interesting. I don't know what else needs to be done. I guess we still need to see them actually boarding the ships and leaving, or yeah, deciding that they still need to get more ships also, because Tyrion said he had doubt about whether or not they had enough ships. So I guess we need to see that, or we need to see some sort of resolution with Dario. I mean, we saw Dario behead the harpy dude, or at least one of the harpy dudes in this episode, but we need to see Dario and maybe Dario's season end, if that makes any sense. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do when they go back to Meereen, but let's cross the narrow sea and let's talk about what this podcast is really going to be about, which was the episode, which was really called, Battle of the Bastards, which takes place in a certain little place called
Winterfell. The Boltons. Jon Snow.
Sansa Stark.
Davos. All these people.
Yes. Tormund. Who else was it? Blackfish, not Blackfish. I keep saying Blackfish. Littlefinger shows up
briefly.
I forgot the last time we'll hear this one.
Rickon Stark.
Oh,
that makes me sad because that's the only one I had Malcolm do. So sad. I'm gonna play one more time.
Rickon Stark.
Yeah, it's a curtain call for Rickon. But by the way, so let's start at the beginning of this whole stuff. So, best scene, best filler scene, best comic relief scene of the season or not? Davos and Tormund talking about how they prepare to go to battle.
I don't know if it was best, but it was good. It was entertaining. I liked it.
Was it better than Bronn and Pod last week?
That's what I was going to say.
No, I like Alan better.
It was a great scene, but Bronn and Pod was better. But they've been doing a lot of these. They've been doing a lot of these, like, fun. Just...
I would love to see an Odd Couple spinoff with Tormund and Davos. Oh, it would be so much fun.
I was very try not to get too far ahead of myself, but I was very worried because I thought Tormund might meet his end in this episode, and I was very happy when he did not.
Well, I thought Davos really was a goner.
Made it seem like he was. You thought Davos was going?
Yeah, I thought Davos was going to be a goner just because I didn't think Davos going forward. I don't know what his purpose is for the storyline, in terms of the storyline. I know what his purpose is as a character, but I don't know what his purpose is.
Well, he's about to have some beef with Melisandre.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. All right. Well, so we see Davos going on his little walk when he craps his pants. Getting ready for battle, and he stumbles across Shireen's little elk dude, her little toy, and it's a very touching moment and a very somber thing, and you can tell it inspired him and turned in his to like Joe Boo. Would you say that, Jake?
You think it was like his I love the reference. I know you're going for Major League, but I don't know if it was his Joe Boo as much as it was just like now all of a sudden he's very, very sad, and he knows now because did he ever really confirm what happened at Stannis' camp that he was not at when they send him away? So this is when he really figures out exactly what went on, and so now there's no doubt he's going to be going full guns blazing at Melisandre now because he knows what happened to Shireen, which is pretty rough.
Yeah, I think that the whole point of that scene was for setup, like. In an episode that wasn't full of setup, that was very much set up for the next conflict.
Yeah, I could see that. And I did like how at the end of the episode we see him looking back at the little thing, and it's obviously on his mind. And then they have that shot where it shows Melisandre, and it's a very. By the way, when did the hell did Melisandre get into Winterfell? Like, how did that happen? When did she just randomly show up?
That was one thing, you know, the last thing we have is Jon and Tormund and the giant running after Ramsay Stark. And then all of a sudden, all of them, you know, they actually get beat there by their own forces. And they're the ones kind of storming the gate. So there was a little bit of, yeah, now all of a sudden there's nobody there. And now all of a sudden, oh, the whole gang's there now. So I certainly noticed that.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the precursor to the battle. We see them the day before going into the big field where the battle is going to be. And this is when you get that scene where John's like, you know, nobody has to die. It could just be one of us. And John, you know, threatens or challenges Ramsay to a duel. Ramsay, being the wuss that he is, backs away. And I love John saying, okay, you have more men. Are they going to be okay with fighting when you didn't want to fight for them? I love that line. So good. So good. But
well, and
but,
John,
but really, really quick, though. Best part of that scene, Lyanna Mormont's scowl on her face.
I was worried that she was in the episode because then I was thinking, like, oh, dear, if something happens to her. But she was just one of those, just they briefly had her there, and so she wasn't involved anymore. I was worried she was going to. Something bad. I'm basically live in a constant state of fear that something bad is going to happen to every character that I like, and she's a character that I like. So her presence there gave me anxiety because Game of Thrones.
Totally. I don't think she was a major part of that battle, though, right?
Oh, no.
No, but I'm used to other TV where, like, you don't pay an actor to be there unless they have a reason to. Like, so... whenever I see a minor character but a recognizable one that's present but not doing anything yet, I assume that they're going to do something later because that's the way that other TV works. But obviously Game of Thrones is different kind of TV.
Yeah, just a little bit. So we see Ramsay says we have Rickon Stark, which he knows is going to rile up Sansa, and Sansa kind of calls them on it and is like, well, we're going to, you know, you're going to die tomorrow, which I thought was a great line. Sansa's finally being assertive. I mean, this whole season she has been, and awesome to see it. So they go back into their little war room trying to decipher what to do. And Alicia, you said this off the air before we started recording. You liked this kind of dynamic between Jon and Sansa trying to decide what to do.
Yeah, I thought Sansa was a really interesting character in this episode, because I feel like every Sansa-centric episode sort of flirts between the line of annoying, petulant, obnoxious Sansa, and then, you know, like strong, taking control of things, you know, being her own woman kind of Sansa. And she kind of flirts with that line a lot. And what I liked about this is that when they're done talking about the strategy of the battle and all that, and the other people leave, and Sansa like turns to Jon and is like, you didn't even ask me my opinion. And I thought it was going to turn into like a petulant Sansa being just annoying, but it, as it turned out, like it totally was not. She brought up some very, very valid points about how she's the only one who knows Ramsay, that, you know, like you said, like Jon tried to offer the prospect of one-on-one combat, and he says it was to get Ramsay mad. It was to rile him up. It was strategic. And to Sansa's eye, like, so Jon's idea of riling up his opponent is to question his opponent's honor without realizing that, like, Ramsay doesn't give a crap about honor. He killed his own father. So Sansa knows that, like, Ramsay will try to also rile up Jon, but Ramsay will do it the way that he did. Like, Ramsay will play a game with a boy and kill their brother right in front of him. Because that's the way that he knows he can rile Jon up. So they're not playing this game at even levels. Like, Ramsay is coming at it from a completely different perspective. And Sansa understands that like Ramsay is the one who lays the traps. Ramsay is the one who plays the games. So to act like you could try to trick Ramsay, like, you are going to get tricked yourself. And then the other thing is the entire thing about Rickon. Like, Sansa is, and we've talked about this before, Sansa's the Baelish in Sansa is coming out here. Her understanding of strategy and of the way that other people work. Like, Ramsay has no honor. He's not going to keep Rickon alive. Right. Like, Rickon was a goner the second he came into the possession of Ramsay.
Right.
And Sansa understands that. Jon doesn't, because he's honorable.
Jon is just a dumb Stark. He's still a dumb Stark. He has not learned, which is kind of what I'm annoyed. Like, he comes back from his resurrection. He should have learned to stop being a dumb Stark. Sansa has learned to stop being a dumb Stark. And in that scene, you see Jon, who's still in this very honorable Stark way of thinking, and Sansa, who is not. And she has definitely learned from Littlefinger there, like you said. Question I have for you, Jake, is she never mentions Littlefinger, but you can tell it's on her mind when she's trying to, like, slow down the, no, we don't have to, like, we can wait. We can, and we just wait till we get more men. Or it's like she's beating around that bush without saying it. Were you okay with that, or do you wish that you would have just flat out come out and said, can you just wait for the Knights of the Vale to come through with Littlefinger?
Yeah, that's really my main problem with this episode, because, you know, all the different scenes this episode work really well. I thought that the battle was awesome, and all the parts of the episode are really good. But the one thing that doesn't add up is, you know, everything that you guys are saying about Sansa finally becoming kind of savvy and kind of being able to, you know, to be assertive and all that stuff, that's all great. Right up until the fact that she is telling Jon that he doesn't know anything, you know nothing, Jon Snow. But then he says, well, what do you have to tell me? And then she doesn't tell him some very vital information that would have saved a lot of men's lives that were fighting for them. And then so that part does not work out for me. And I was really, that's kind of what almost spoils the episode for me. And then the fact that, Michael, I don't agree with you about Jon being a dumb Stark right up until the battle starts. And then, it was just a little kind of convenient for the plot that he ends up throwing away all of these plans that they have and gets goaded into changing their all of their strategy and really sacrificing a lot of their men and getting put in a really bad situation tactically.
Because Ramsay knew it would anger him, and it knew it would rile him up.
But I didn't buy that. I think he's been in enough fights to understand exactly what was at stake. And I know that that's how they played it in the show, you know, and they had all those, you know, those moments looking at John, looking at Rickon, and then Rickon, you know, dying in front of him and all that stuff. But to me, I didn't buy it because they had a plan in place that was going to take advantage of their strengths because considering their route number and all that. It's not like he doesn't know that. And the fact that he's already trying to think ahead and trying to goad Ramsay, to me, Sansa saying, oh, yeah, he's the one that sets the traps. Oh, yeah, he's the one that that's fine. I mean, that's what they're trying to sell us on the plot. But to me, Jon Snow's character, I thought that sold him a little short. So I didn't like that part. But, you know, from that point forward, then the episode was awesome. But I didn't like those parts of it. I thought Sansa said something. And I thought that they kind of had Jon kind of lose his mind. And I didn't buy that.
All right. Well, let's talk about that Rickon scene. So Rickon, the two sides come to the field and they're about to get it on, and here comes Ramsay pulling Rickon with a rope, and it looks like he's gonna behead him, and then he sends him on his merry way, only to shoot him down with a bow, which riles up Jon Snow, obviously. And so let's talk about this thing. Shooting someone with a bow from that far away, first of all, how skilled do you have to be? So Ramsay misses a bunch of times. Was he trying to miss? Was he screwing with them by missing?
I think he was screwing. He was trying to lure John into that spot. I think his entire purpose for that was he was missing on purpose, and when he wanted to, he shot him because he wanted John in no man's land so that his cavalry could charge him.
Right. Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but to me, this was some like JFK conspiracy type bullshit. And the way that he was firing those arrows and how far off he was, he had to fire it the arrow goes up and then comes down type of trajectory. Kind of like we saw.
Well, why wasn't
like
Rickon running in a zigzag?
Well, no, that's for sure, right? But do you guys remember a couple seasons ago when Edmure was trying to light his father's boat on fire when they were sending him off on his river run, burial?
Oh yeah, and he shot it with the bow, yeah.
You know, he didn't shoot it with the bow. The Blackfish had to shoot it with the bow afterwards because he failed so miserably. But you know, there's certainly an art to that, you know, shooting the arrows like that. But when you watch how it worked out with Rickon, he was able to, or Ramsay missed, three or four shots that were coming in at a downward trajectory. And then the arrow that killed him was almost pointed upward. So that's why I'm saying, you know, me and Alicia talked about this before we started. My first thought is that, oh, they have archers in the trees and it's some sort of ambush that they lured John into. And that's what Sansa was talking about, and that, oh, he's laying a trap. But it turned out none of that was true. I mean, the way that the battle played out, that was just the whole trap was just to fool or just to goad John into attacking as opposed to waiting for Ramsay to attack. And that's the whole, to me it was totally oversold, and I still think that arrow came from somewhere, not from Ramsay's bow, the way they filmed that. That's the only thing about the episode that I was really this.
No, I think that's JFK conspiracy-ish. You think there was a second shooter in the grassy knoll?
There had to have been, because the way that arrow came in, I mean, I'm just saying. I don't know if it was the grassy knoll or it was, Keith Hernandez's spit. I don't know what it was, but it was not a normal arrow fired from. Maybe it was a magic arrow from Ramsay's bow and arrow.
Yeah, I'm on record agreeing with you, Jake. I initially, when it happened, I thought that there was somebody closer who was ready to hit that shot. But because they didn't, I feel like if that's what they had intended, the film, the showrunners, if that's what they had intended, I feel like they would have shown us the person who shot.
To me, it just seemed like a way too convenient like plot device to move it forward and get them into a position where they could have all these cool battlefield sequences of John's army almost losing, only to have the day saved eventually.
But they were cool. Definitely cool. Really cool.
Yeah. And so we see John there, and here he comes with the cavalry coming up at him. It looks like he's going to die. It looks like he was almost multiple times in this episode, which I loved about Jon Snow, is that he looked like he had resorted to dying. He was okay with it. Like, multiple times it looked like he just knew this was the end. This is how I go down. That's fine. I'm okay. I'm doing this, doing the right thing. Like, this is fine. Which I don't know if that necessarily is something he would have done pre-death. So I thought that was interesting, which kind of comes back from that, you know, we see Melisandre earlier talking about how, you know, what did she bring back people for? And well, because the god wants them to be back. Well, why do they want? I don't know. That's just the god we have.
Well, I think it's interesting that they had that conversation between Melisandre and Jon. And then, like you said, you have so many of these moments in this battle where Jon looks like he's ready to, you know, die with his sword swinging or you know, just ready to go, and he doesn't. But then you also have this sequence where the sequence starts with him, the horse is charging, and what a cool shot that was with him just like getting his sword ready. With the horses charging, but then his own cavalry arrives just at the right time to you know, prevent him from getting trampled, valiantly as it may have been, he still would have gotten trampled. And then that cool bit where it's just you're on ground level with him and he's, you know, hacking at people and people are hacking at him and oh, there's a bunch of close calls and he makes it out alive. And like I wrote in my notes, like just a general thought about battle as it pertained to like the show and just in general, these kinds of battles that happen, like to survive this type of warfare, you had to be really lucky. And then it was interesting at the end of the show, the inside the episode, the showrunners basically said the same thing, like Jon just gets lucky. Like, and we wanted to show that the reason you survive these things is because you get lucky. Now on the flip side of that, is Jon lucky? Or if you were to talk to Melisandre about it, is Jon's time to die not now? And
yeah, what do you guys think of that Melisandre scene as far as like what her state of mind is now versus what it was, before Stannis croaked?
Isn't it such a shruggy kind of faith? Like, I believe because these things happen, but like, I don't think she has the buy-in that she used to have. But she still has like it. She's sort of at the point where it's like, I don't know what this dude is doing, but you know, obviously he's used me. So shrug, I guess I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah. I think her buy-in is still 100%. She 100% has faith that God is the, you know, the supreme being that's right, pulling the strings on everything. I think I think at first when Stannis died, she didn't know whether she believed in her religion anymore. Now, I think she wholeheartedly believes in the religion and in the magic and all that stuff, but now she doesn't know what her role is. And I thought that the most telling right, part of it was when she tells John, you know, yeah, maybe you're the chosen one. And then again, maybe you are going to die here and maybe you're just one little small piece in this overall story. Who the hell knows what we're here for? And I think that's what her crisis is. It's she doesn't know. She thought she was on the vanguard of it for sure. And now she doesn't know if she's just a little bit player or not.
Yeah,
but there's argument to say that John, her as an extension of John, that, you know, if you wanted to read into this episode, that John survives at all is a miracle. So it's
you could say that about a lot of things in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is one of my favorite things about this episode was, you know, there were so many, you know, Hollywood endings here. So many, oh no, they're definitely doomed. There's no way out now. And they got saved every time. But it never felt contrived. It never felt like a bailout, like we've seen so many times with Dany, where Dany scenes, it comes out like, really? She's bringing the dragon. The dragon's gonna save her.
Yeah, but that
really, she just showed
up
at the right time. Yep, but they showed up just the right time, but it didn't feel campy. It didn't feel lame.
It felt war movie-ish.
Yeah, but
with that. It's just
it felt right. It felt right. So let's talk about these battle scenes.
Yeah, just real quick before you move on, Michael.
Yeah,
I understand what you're saying in that I don't think any of the things ended campy. But going back to what I was saying before, to me, this is like the battle was the fruit off the poisonous tree kind of thing. In that, to me, the contrived part was all the precursing things to the battle, and that's what kind of like was like made me say, maybe, you know, it was a good episode, but those things still bother me, the Sansa thing and the Jon thing. So I'm sorry, move forward.
All right, fair enough. Let's talk about the battle itself, the actual fighting. First of all, big round of applause, big, huge round of applause to the choreography and the cinematography. The way they did this was awesome. The aerial shots when the Boltons surround, you know, John's, you know, alliance was fantastic. I loved the fact that how realistic it was. And if you watch the inside of the episode at the end, David Benioff was talking about this, about how they've watched a bunch of medieval war movies and tried to see how these scenes get fought. And so many times you don't see the realistic perspective of it. You don't see the fallout. And this is one thing that Game of Thrones is really good at. You get to see all the bodies. Yeah, like you have these horses
and the chaos and
all these dudes dying. Yeah, of course they're just going to end up stacking up. You're going to have to walk over dead bodies and dead horses and you know, half men that have been just slaughtered in half. Yeah, you're going to have to do that. And I love the scene when John is drowning in that dead body stampede, where he's and the way it's filmed, you as a viewer are gasping for air like he is. It reminded me a lot of Saving Private Ryan, the D-Day scene when they're coming on the beach. Did you get that vibe, Jake?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It was really nice to watch, and in all of the ways that they worked in the CGI was very good too. You know, I thought there was a lot of, you know, I think Alicia said it, like near misses where somebody would be about to get killed and then a horse would run him over, or somebody is about to thrust somebody with a sword and they'd get taken out, or John's about to say something to somebody, give orders to somebody, and then they get an arrow in the eye. And just all of the things balanced at the beginning of the fight with the troops engaging, and then Ramsay's, you know, continually firing arrows in, and Davos decides not to because he doesn't want to hurt his own troops. You know, it communicated a whole lot. It communicated, you know, who was good and who was bad, you know, what, you know, and all of the other things you're talking about, Michael, in that, you know, just we were given the perspective of Jon Snow as he's going through this battle and seeing how lucky he is and how good of a fighter he is and how he needed both of those things to survive. It was really cool.
I thought it was cool the way that they incorporated the sort of shield wall thing that you've seen, you know, you see
Spartan warfare,
the Spartan and the Romans and all this kind of stuff, because that's not necessarily the kind of warfare that has been associated with the Game of Thrones world. But it makes perfect sense that they would use this strategy. But that the whole, like, the tightness of the battle and everyone getting sort of into that crush was, I agree with you, Michael, that it left you feeling breathless. It was probably a little bit too much for me, like as a viewer, because having recently watched like the documentary on Hillsborough and being very, very keenly aware of.
Yeah, I thought it was the only one making the Hillsborough connection.
No,
there. And it felt uncomfortable
not to.
Yeah, to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you're aware of what happened with Hillsborough and any other human crushes, that, you know, this is a way that people die, and that people have died historically, and it's a horrendous way to go. So that it took me out of the episode a little bit. I have no issue with them doing it because I'm sure that that's, you know, the way that these things happen. But like, just, you know, as a viewing experience, it was uncomfortable at a certain point. But I think one of the cool things about this whole battle sequence is that it was uncomfortable, and that it very much made you feel like, you watch that and you think like, oh God, thank God I live in the era I do, that you know, I would have never been born in a situation
that we have drones and yeah, bombs.
But I mean, not that as a woman, not that I would ever be involved in this kind of thing, but still, like. Like these are, you know, war is a horrible thing, and this type of warfare was a particularly horrible thing, and I thought they did a really good job of portraying how horrible it was. It would be how desperate it would be, while also keeping it, you know, the stakes were still very high. And I will admit, there were, like you were getting at, there were many moments where it felt like John was going to die. I believed for several moments this or that. Like, I actually wondered if they were going to give John the completely horrible death of being trampled, like just being stepped on and suffocated like that.
Especially the way when they would show his face, like he looked like he was, like I said, like it looked like he had resorted himself to that was a potential outcome. And that just might
knowing that Melisandre, because they've already set up knowing that Melisandre can resurrect him. So they could have killed him in that way and just had it be utterly horrible. And that's going to be traumatic to a person, even if you bring them back to life, just add more trauma to this poor guy. But they kept the tension up because of that. And I, like I said earlier, I thought Tormund was going to die at a certain point.
I love that scene with Tormund and Small John Umber.
Yeah.
Because it reminded me of the Bolton on Bolton crime, you know, when Ramsay kills Roose, where for a split second you're like, wait a minute, who's killing who? What's going on? Because I couldn't tell. Like, was Small John Umber about to kill him? Was who was dying? I couldn't tell who was dying because they were just – it was just that dirty fighting like we've seen Bronn talk about where they're just trying to, you know, poke each other's eyeballs out and just – they're just clawing at anything that they have. And I love that dynamic. And I loved Tormund just putting his ass on the line repeatedly. And this is why I thought he was going to have a valiant death, and it was going to be a like – Tormund is awesome. He died, but – hell of a job for him dying that way. And it turns out it was just one that died like that. But what did you think of Tormund in this episode, Jake?
I thought that everything you're saying is accurate, except for the fact that he also was the guy who said, let's get the hell out of here right now. And so he's the one who started kind of that human crush right there at the end. So other than that, I thought he had a lovely showing in this episode. And I did like his one-on-one battle with – that was an Umber. I think that's what we said, right?
Yeah, I think it was Small John Umber.
Small Umber, whatever. And I was very happy when he bit his throat out or whatever the hell he did. It's kind of like a Roadhouse, Patrick Swayze kind of death, and it was kind of good stuff.
Hey, wildlings, they fight dirty, man. They will.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, they will get the job done no matter how it happens.
One last thing is once again, I am kind of playing this under protest in that I thought that I thought it was kind of cheap the way Jon Snow was goaded into the bad tactics that put them into that situation. But I thought once they had Ramsay had them pull up that little Spartan like shield circle thing and they were kicking the crap out of the wildlings, I thought that was kind of interesting how they'd made a point for Tormund to say that, you know, I don't know nothing about your dumb strategy, and we're just out here, you know, trying to kick some butt, but we don't really plan ahead on anything. I thought that was kind of interesting how the tactics of the Boltons really just intimidated the hell out of the wildlings and really had them on the ropes right up until they had their bacon saved by another army.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the tactics that the Boltons had. I was really surprised that they fought that way, especially because that's this kind of fighting that we've seen the Unsullied fight with, that very uniformed military style regiment. I mean, mind you, they're all military, but
and things, yeah.
Right. But it's just the way that they fought was pretty fascinating. And the other thing before we move on to them actually getting to the castle was I love the shots of the bows coming in and the arrows off the bows coming down.
Oh, there was one where they followed the arrow up and then back down. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. And then I think, like, that had to be just terrifying that you're going into this, like, knowing that all these bullets are coming down to kill you. And first of all, can we – I don't know. I might have mentioned this already, but just the stupidness of fighting that way. Like – really, you're just shooting these bows up in the air. You can kill your own dudes just as easily as you could kill the opposition.
Well, that's how they show the difference between Ramsay, who has no honor, and Davos, who does.
Well, it's not even about honor at that point. It's sheer numbers. It's, you know, one of them's battling fighting a war of attrition where he's like, I have superior numbers. I don't really care how many men I sacrifice, you know, and you can say all you want, but about whether that's the right thing or the wrong thing. Obviously it's the wrong thing. It's the less moral thing to do, but he's playing a battle of numbers, and his advantage is you know, you lure all of Jon Snow's forces into one spot, or, you know, and then you, you know, you sacrifice some of your guys so you can take many more of their people off the board with those bows and arrows, you know, and we're talking about in you know, the era before, you know, tanks and missiles and things like that. So this is how they had to get it done. How else would you do it? And it really was a chess match.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so we see the Knights of the Vale come in and they turn the tide in favor of John's group, the House Stark Alliance, if you will. I wish they had a name. I wish they had a name. I feel weird calling it the Alliance, but, you know, the North, the Starks. And so then we see Ramsay, being the wuss that he is, retreating back to the castle, and 1-1 was not going to be denied entry into the castle, which was just fantastic to see. And
great callback to Tully, the beginning
pulled
of the
his
season.
Fingers off.
Well, yeah. Great callback to Hardhome. Oh, same thing happened with Hardhome. There was a door scene there too.
Well, just the number of, like, the they have shown in the past that giants and doors are no concern. So I really liked that, like, Ramsay is setting up for a siege, and we just saw another siege, you know, an episode ago. Ramsay is setting up for a siege, but, you know, what they don't count on is that doors don't mean anything to giants, no matter how big those doors are. And they did that in up at the wall earlier in the season. And yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, you have a giant, you have a giant door opener.
Yeah, and it definitely worked for 1-1. He gets in there. And here we have another scene, which I loved, or the choreography of it, where John comes face to face with Ramsay, who ends up killing 1-1. By the way, bravo to 1-1. How many bows, I mean, how many arrows did he take? Like a million? He looked like
quite a few.
He looked like the Nutty Professor when the Nutty Professor had the Eddie Murphy and the Nutty Professor had all the acupuncture needles in him. Remember that scene?
No, but I also, to me, he looked like the guy from Hellraiser.
All right, never seen it, but okay. All right, fair enough. I liked the way that he looks at John, and there's like this understanding of like, dude, you've been clutch for us. Thank you. You're the best. And then all of a sudden, Ramsay kills him, and it's like, oh no, there's Ramsay, and Ramsay's got his bow. Oh no, what's John gonna do? So John gets his shield, and he's doing the thing where Ramsay once finally says that they're gonna have their one-on-one battle, and Ramsay's shooting the arrows at him, and he's got the shield, and he's stopping him one by one. He comes up to him, so cool, so cool, and then he just finally gets to him and starts wailing on him, Alicia.
Yeah, and I thought that's the way that Ramsay was going to go. But the whole time I was because when Ramsay walks into Winterfell, there's a clear shot of him walking away from the camera. And in the small of his back is that knife that he used to kill his father. And so when Jon is on top of him, you know, punching his face out, the whole time I'm just thinking, he has a knife. He has his knife. He has his knife. Like,
I was thinking the same thing.
Like, John, he has his knife. So, but it, you know, again, it was a red herring. So thankfully that didn't come into play. But again, my anxiety levels whenever characters are involved in these things are, I was more worried for John with Ramsay's knife that didn't get used than I was at any point during like the battle. And I was worried for John at times during the battle too. So like, that was a very anxious scene that didn't pay off that way, but I'm glad that they didn't pull something like that, because that would have been annoying.
Yeah, I agree with everything Alicia just said. I totally thought that when they were playing up that there was the possibility for that. Even though I didn't really think that they were going to kill off John, I thought that was something that could happen. I liked how John's beating him to a pulp, and then all of a sudden he looks over at Sansa and says, yeah, I'm going to let you handle this one. I thought that was kind of fun.
I was hoping she was going to get down and start punching him too. Like for a second,
I thought she might, get out his sword and then, chop off his head or something, like those Starks do. But
no, but she had better ideas. Yeah, she had better ideas. So then we see Ramsay all bloodied and battered, and he's sitting in a little bit of a dungeon, or a jail cell, it looks like. And what does she put on him? The dogs, his own dogs, who haven't been fed in 7 days. So, hey, Ramsay, if you didn't want to be eaten by your own freaking dogs, maybe you should have fed them sooner.
Yeah, and we've been saying for a while now that like I had been hoping of the acceptable ways for Ramsay to die, like being eaten by his own dogs was definitely high up on the list. My one complaint about this, and every time they've brought up the dogs in any way, shape, or form, is that just because somebody gets eaten by dogs doesn't mean I want to see it and or hear it. And that was my that legitimately just scared me right now. Like I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't need it. I could do without. I could do with knowing that that's what's going on without actually having to hear or see it.
Yeah, and if you're 95 years old, you pass away in your house and you have a little poodle or something, you know what's going to happen, right, Alicia?
Oh, Jesus. Don't say that.
Your little dog's going to eat you. Sorry.
Only if they haven't been fed in 7 days. That's the thing. So you just got to hope you get found before 7 days.
I think that once you're done, you go from being master to lunch. I think that's how it works. Dogs don't care. Neither do cats.
My only complaint about Ramsay going out that way, and this is a total lame ass complaint, but it was too perfect. Like if you would have said, "What's the perfect way for Ramsay to die?" Oh, get eaten by his own dogs, and it happened. It happened.
Sure, all right.
Well, I agree though. It felt like the kind of thing that you could expect from a show giving a bad character their comeuppance. And in a weird way, when Game of Thrones does it, it feels not real because so much.
Because it feels like they put a poll out on Twitter. Okay, we're going to kill Ramsay. How do you want it? Feed him to his own dogs. Okay, we're going to have
so much of the show. So much of the show is about like doing things off the beat, And so this one was kind of an on beat type of thing. My biggest question about it was, and I think at the end of the day, you're saying, Michael, that it was too perfect. But certainly, I was fine with how it was. It was predictable, but still good. I still want to know where the hell Ghost is. He wasn't a part of any of this.
I thought Ghost was going to be the one that was going to chew him up.
That's what initially I thought. That's how they were going to do it. I thought an equally cool ending would have been he's got his dogs there and he's like, "Oh, my dogs would never eat me." And then I was like, "Okay, enter Ghost," and Ghost kills all the dogs and then eats them up. I thought that would have been another way they could have done that. Would have been like an extra
Ghost would have been like,
but also fun. Yeah, and then he gets to watch
like that.
Beloved dogs. Yeah. What's that?
Shush your face.
Hey, Ramsay's face was shushed by it. So yeah.
Yes, it was. That was the first, yeah. Took
right.
His jaw,
okay.
Right?
Yeah. Did we need to have a close up of that? Did we really need to?
Yeah, because we didn't get a close up of the lady
Bolton
getting eaten with the kid. We just got the sounds, right?
We did get to see the them flaying bodies in the battlefield, which always makes me wonder who are the dudes that they're flaying.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. Who were those guys? Were they just like soldiers said, sorry, dude, you're going to make the ultimate sacrifice? Or are they like captured guys?
Are they local criminals? Like, what are they? What's their backstory? I want to know. I don't trust it to be actual local criminals. I think that Ramsay is too sinister to kill people who needed to have their comeuppance. But
I imagine he just has a cell somewhere where he had a bunch of people that he was just like waiting to torture. He had, he could never like run out.
It's like, his current reek?
Yeah, something like that. Well, even if they weren't his current reek, I bet you he just had a queue built up of people he wanted to torture. And, he would never let that queue expire. He always have to have a couple people ready to go just in case he had the itch to torture somebody.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that. That wraps up the episode. In the next week on Game of Thrones, it looks like we're getting King's Landing stuff, more Meereen, and they're going to go back to Winterfell with Littlefinger, Peter Baelish, getting thrown into the fold, where it looks like, hey, he wants some he wants a reward for saving their ass, which he kind of deserves. What's it going to be? Is it going to be Sansa's hand in marriage? I don't know. We're going to have to find that out. What do you guys think it's going to be?
I think that certainly we had Peter hitting on Sansa. I don't know how it's going to turn out. But the thing that I was most interested in seeing for next week's episode was the fact that we're going to have a return to the twins, and somehow Jamie's going to have some sort of interaction with the Freys. And I want to know how that's going to turn out. Just one real quick side
question. I'm telling you right now. Arya's coming back. The season's going to end with Arya putting on Walder Frey's new wife's face and killing him.
Ooh, okay. That's a bold prediction, to be sure. Now that we've lost Ramsay, and now that Slaver's Bay is taken care of, and really all of the characters of the show are coming together, presumably at some point or other, once the dust settles, to fight, you know, the White Walkers. If you take the White Walkers out of this, who are the supreme human baddies left running around? Who's on your list?
The High Sparrow, even though he's just a baddie because I don't like him. Like, he's not like a bad, like in a different universe, he's not a baddie, but I'm just convinced that he is because I don't like him.
Yeah, I mean, you can make the argument that the High Sparrow's the baddie, or that Cersei's the baddie, or that the Sand Snakes are the baddie. I mean, in that one, it's kind of like a coin flip. They're all just kind of baddies, and we'll have to wait to see how that sorts out. Who else?
Oh, what's his Iron Islands dude? Euron
Greyjoy.
Oh, definitely. I think he could become the new Ramsay.
Oh, and then Walder Frey.
And then we got the Freys there, right? So I'm hoping that we get some sort of resolution with the Freys. We know we're going to get something with them. I don't know if we're going to have back-to-back weeks of satisfying revenge deaths, but hopefully the Freys are on the chopping block at some point.
But how many satisfying revenge deaths could we get before it feels too like things are going too well?
Well, they're going to have to have some twists in there. But at the same time, you know, a lot of people are complaining, even though I try not to read too many reviews, and certainly I stay away from theories, Michael. But just the, you know, a lot of people are complaining that the plot is spinning forward at a breakneck pace. And it certainly is. But at the same time, you know, once you get to the point to where it's kind of, you know, things are no longer moving apart as they were for the first, you know, 5-6 seasons, then with all these things coming together, there's going to have to be a lot of these moments over the next however many episodes are left. How many episodes are left, Michael?
Only 13. It's going to be 7 in season 7 and 6 in season 8 to end it. That's it. That's at least what they're saying now.
Yeah, and you know, it's very convenient to blame, now that we're past where the books are, it's very easy to blame the TV writers for anything that you don't like about the show. But it just, from a matter of how the hell else are you going to resolve these things, there's going to be a lot of these resolution-type plots coming up. And so I think we might be fatigued by it just because we've spent so much time building up and theorizing. And it goes back to any of these TV shows that have been popular that are serials over the last 10, 15 years, you know, back to, you know, Lost and X-Files and all these things that started these type of serials. Everybody likes to complain about the end because you can't theorize anymore. Now there's actually something written down. And I would just say, let's enjoy how it goes, and hopefully we have some nice moments. And, you know, we'll just have to kind of accept how it lays out.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a fun finale next week. So looking forward to that big time. But let's end this episode with some What's Rot Ya and What's Got Ya.
What's Rot Ya? What's Got Ya? What's Rot Ya? What's Got Ya?
That gets more embarrassing every time I listen to it. It really does.
I love it.
It's really beautiful, Michael. It's beautiful.
No.
You got it done yourself.
I don't like it as much as I did the first time. But Jake, it's Father's Day. You go first. What's right and what's got you?
Thank you. I had a lovely Father's Day, and thank you very much. But my right you got you actually happened a few days before Father's Day. What's rot me is that my Amex card, not the card was stolen, but my number was stolen. And so I woke up on, I think, Tuesday morning and realized that somebody in some northern California city was using my card number at a gas station. So they somehow made a duplicate card, and I was the victim of some sort of credit fraud. So I immediately called American Express, And they handled it pretty well and you know, shut down the card, shut down the transactions and all that stuff. And they sent me a new card very quickly. I had it by the next day or two. And that was very nice how they resolved it. But, you know, you never like to be a victim in that regard. What's got me happens to be with the fact that that Amex card, that number that was stolen, always something that every time I used my American Express, especially when I used it online, my expiration date was something that for me had a little bit of irony to it, and that my old card, the expiration happened to fall on April of 2020. So that would be when I had to tell the person online or type it in the numbers, I would always have to type in my purchase as my expiration being 4/20. And if you know what my profession is, you know what I do all day long is, you know, not that I, you know, have anything against anybody legally partaking in anything they're allowed to legally do. My whole life mission is basically trying to get 13-year-olds to stop smoking weed. So that always kind of, you know, was a little ironic jab into my forehead every time I entered in my card number. And now I have a card that doesn't have that expiration date. And so that's happy for me. And I'm glad I'm finally done with that card. Alicia, how about you?
You finished that on a high point.
Yeah.
yeah, exactly. Let's see. What's rot me and what's got me? What's rot me is how freaking hot it is. The heat wave is here.
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear
and
it.
And I know.
109.
It was 120 here today. I don't want to hear it.
Okay, yeah, Michael, you live in Phoenix. You don't get to complain because you live in a fiery desert of fire. And man should not put oneself in one's position to live. Like, that city should not exist. So, yeah, your heat is terrible. Let's take you out of this. In L.A., it hit 109 today in the valley. It's That's very me. Hot. It's not cooling down at night, so I'm like, I don't sleep well when it's hot. Like, it just messes with my sleeping. So I woke up at 3:00 in the morning last night. I was just sweating and I couldn't go back to sleep. So that's not cool. I need it to cool down ASAP. What's
yeah,
got
very
me?
Upsetting. Yeah, very upsetting. It's still, Michael. I mean, it's almost midnight and it's 78 degrees out here. Gee whiz.
It's 88 degrees inside my apartment right now because I don't have the AC on because I have a bit of an issue that I'm going to get to in the what's brought me and what's got me. So continue.
Okay, I just pulled up the weather and it's 102 in Phoenix right now. that's not cool. But it does say 88 here in Van Nuys. Okay, what's got me is and prepare yourself for soccer here, peoples. Spain is going to advance out of their group pretty much because they got another
Sounds
win in Europa.
Pumpy.
I mean, in Euros, USA beat Ecuador to advance to the semifinals, and they're going to play Argentina on Tuesday, and that will be an interesting match. But I've sort of like the USA has done well enough in this tournament that I'm happy. Just in general, it's been great having soccer on morning, noon, and night. Been watching it with my family. This Father's Day, we watched the games with my dad. So that was really good. I enjoy all the soccer I can. And the icing on all of this cake, because I am a hater and I embrace my haterness, watching Mexico lose 7-0 to Argentina on Saturday was just so cathartic and wonderful. That's
pretty good.
Like I said, scoreboard.
I hate soccer.
Exactly.
But I'm fully on board on that sentiment. Absolutely. I hope when they left the stadium, they walked through a giant puddle of urine or something. I know they're prone to throw that.
Fans have a tendency to throw the
thing. I feel bad for the fans from Chile. Like, I hope they got a police escort like 20 minutes before the game ended to get out of there. I really do. I hope they did.
Yeah. But you know, safe and sound at home. That was super fun. And yes, I apologize to any Mexico fans out there. I am a hater. I am okay with that.
Hey, but now you can hop on the U.S. bandwagon. So welcome aboard. Welcome aboard. But let's get to my rot on got, because I really have to get some crap off my chest here. So my what's rot me is I have to talk about my stupid ass air conditioner. So I have this air conditioner that when you turn it on, cold air comes out. It's great. That's what air conditioners do, and it's fantastic. The problem is, for some reason, I think there's something wrong with the motor. There's a short. There's, I don't know. But when I turn it, when it's run its course, after a while, it gets really loud, like, and so it was this low rumbling hum forever. Now, for some reason, this sound is coming from behind these, where the air conditioner unit is in my apartment is in the same place of where the circuit breaker box is. So I can't tell if this loud is coming from the circuit breaker box or the AC unit. I touch the wall and it vibrates. And so I'm freaking out. I'm not wanting to turn on the AC because I don't want it to make it worse. And so on top of this, I have a flight to Chicago. We're recording this right now. It's 11:43 p.m. My flight to Chicago leaves at 5:30, which means I need to leave the apartment before 3. So I got 3 hours to edit this podcast, finish packing, watch Veep and Silicon Valley, and then go to the airport, drive, and then get ready to fly to Chicago. And it's still like 88 degrees inside this apartment, and I'm dying.
Run your I'm really air, dude.
I'm afraid there's going to be a fire or something. It's going to burn
You're
down
afraid
the
there's
apartment.
Be a fire?
It's dude, be a fire. It sounds terrifying.
You
it
live sounds, in Phoenix. It already is a fire.
I don't want my house burned down. I'm terrified. I'm really terrified. Really
you
terrified.
Rent this place?
Yeah, I'm not that rich.
Well, that's my point, though. You rent this place,
right? I don't have a charity like Pat Hayden that's paying me
millions
for nothing.
Exactly, yeah. But if you rent this place, how long is this? I mean, this has been multiple weeks that we've been dealing with this because you're complaining about not being able to run the air a couple weeks ago. Why have you not gone to your landlord and say, hey,
no,
I'm
I mean,
I've had
the hum problem, but it's been just a low rumble hum. So I just thought it was nothing. This thing that's happened. Now it's only been around for 2 days and it sounds like a saw that's grinding metal. So it happened on Friday night and then it stopped after like an hour and it was like late at night. So it stopped after an hour. So then I didn't run the AC on Saturday and then today I didn't run the AC, but it's today I ran the AC for about 20 minutes. And then after I turned it on, it happened again. So I immediately filled out a work order online for my apartment company, apartment building. So I'm pretty sure they're going to come tomorrow to look at it, but I'm not going to be here. So that's always going to be weird. So, yeah.
Well, you have 3 hours to go. I would say that's supreme motivation to get this done as quickly as possible. So hopefully we didn't give you too many edits to do.
Yeah, there's not that many. There's not that many. And what's got me is that I'm going to the Cubs Cardinals game on Tuesday. The Cubs are red hot. They just swept the Pirates. The greatest thing is that on I believe it was on Saturday night, they had an 11.5 game lead on the Cardinals. That was the largest lead in the standings the Cubs have had since 1929, and it's only June 18th.
Are they going to pull a Cleveland this year, Michael? Is that what's going to happen?
We're going to win a title? I hope so. I really do. I really hope so.
Good luck to you.
Yeah. We will see what happens. But, what's going up with the Woods Bruins show? And then we'll wrap this up.
We just posted an episode this last week, and I thought it was a pretty fun one. So if you want to listen to that, go on to iTunes, search What's Bruins Show. And we will be having our 99th official What's Bruin episode, I think, in the next couple weeks. And we're going to have on, I believe, an LA Daily News, the beat writer for the UCLA Bruins. So that should be fun talking to her. And
it's not Jack Wang?
No, Jack Wang's off the UCLA beat now. I'm not sure why, but now we have a wonderful young lady. Her name is Thuc Nguyen, and she is very stats oriented. And I'm looking forward to meeting her and to talking some Bruins sports with her, especially football season coming up. So that's what's going on the What's Bruins Show. Please listen if you are inclined. And plus, I'm going to yell at Bill a lot, and he's going to get mad at me, and he's going to talk crap because what happened in the NBA Finals.
Awesome. I look forward to it. Give him a bunch of crap about Cleveland. Please do. And and so that's going to wrap up the episode. As always, follow us on Twitter at Random Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Random Troy. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Overcast, and SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/RainofTroyRadio. Phone number 213-373-1872, and our email address is rainoftroy@fansided.com. We will be back next week to talk about the finale of Game of Thrones. And
wow.
After that, yeah, it's amazing that it's gone this quickly. And it feels like we just started Rot on Gut yesterday. And hey, maybe we'll talk about it. Maybe we'll have a season recap episode afterwards or something. I don't know. We'll figure something out. But yeah.
What my last question for you guys is, do you guys see the promo for Westworld?
No.
Oh my God! Watch it. It was on before the episode. Oh my God!
Are we gonna do rot on?
Rot. Yeah. I don't know. It looked really cool, and it's an old '70s movie. But I think that what they're doing with it looks pretty outstanding. The only hiccup might be is that it's during football season, so that might be tough.
Yeah, just might be tough. But we'll figure out. We'll figure something out. I'll look at it. Alicia, I know, is a big fan of the TV show, so maybe she'll be down. But yeah. So until then, we will catch you guys later. See ya.
See ya.